Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. If you're new to the channel, consider subscribing and smashing that thumbs up. Download your favorite scary story on my Apple Podcast or Spotify, Tales from the Dark Forest. Now, let's get spooky. I have some pretty intense scarring on my arm. The scars there wrap around my forearm and the back of my hand. They're violent red, thick, ropey gouges that are impossible to miss. There are parts of my arm where the flesh dips in, where the muscle has died or grown back wrong. I used to have similar scars on my face, but I recently coughed up the money to have those revised by a plastic surgeon. Now you can only see some thin white lines, and only if you know what you're looking for. The scars aren't that big of a deal anymore. I wear long sleeves most of the year. When I don't, people stare, but it doesn't bother me anymore. The staring is honestly the least of my problems. When people ask me what happened, I usually lie. I was in a car accident, is the easiest one. It's common enough that no one questions it. Sometimes I'll say I was mauled by a shark or a bear, or that it was a childhood accident. Something vague like that. When I get follow-up questions, I just say that I don't want to talk about it. It's the truth, after all. Most people respect that, and the people that don't are turds. Sometimes, very rarely, I will say that I was attacked by a dog. That's the closest I've gotten to telling the truth. But now, I want to try and tell the true story of what happened to me. I haven't told this story for a long time, but I want to write it down and put it out there. It's a true story, and there might be other people out there who experienced what I experienced. I want them to know that they're not alone. It would help me a lot if I knew I wasn't alone. I'll do my best to tell it exactly how it happened, but my memory is hazy in some spots. In others, things happened so quickly or my brain had protected me from blotting them out. So, forgive me if some parts are missing or mixed up. Anyways, I'll start with the camping trip. Times were tough that year. I just started a new job and my girlfriend had been laid off just the month before. But it was the height of the summer and we really wanted to go somewhere. Without much money, our options were pretty limited. We decided to go camping, despite neither of us having camped before. We bought a bunch of cheap camping supplies and I invited my little brother along, and we drove halfway across the state to a big campground for our mini vacation. Emily had been my girlfriend for years. We met our first year of college and immediately clicked. We acted like best friends for almost a year before I finally broke down and asked her out. We had been inseparable ever since. Griffin, my little brother, was a lot younger than me. We had almost 10 years between us. He was goofy and a lot of fun, and was in his senior year of high school when we went on the trip. On the drive down, everything was normal. Emily was in high spirits and was passing the auxiliary cord back and forth with Griffin. They played every annoying song they had downloaded on their phone, trying their best to outdo one another with their terrible taste in music. It was incredibly obnoxious, but undeniably charming at the same time. It was warm and blammy outside as I drove down the interstate. The air was wet and muggy as we drove with the windows down. The park was beautiful as we drove the empty winding road that led to the campground. The trees were lush and green with leaves, and the forest floor was full of colorful branches and laurel. Delicate ferns covered the forest floor among damp, verdant green moss and mushrooms gathered on top of fallen trees. It was a huge park with acres and acres of managed forest, which butted right up against even more miles of unmanaged state game land. We were truly in the wilderness, but at the park station surrounded by postcards and bumper stickers and coolers filled with sodas, It didn't feel like it. It just felt like the vacation that we were all hoping for. I had reserved our camping spot online and thought that I had picked a spot near the park center, but I was dead wrong. When we checked in and I gave my name, the old lady behind the desk gave me directions to drive a couple of miles back to the farthest loop. I felt a little sheepish about my mistake. I had mixed up the loop names and booked the wrong one, but I figured it didn't really matter. Emily and Griffith were still goofing off by the drink coolers, and when I mentioned the mix-up, they didn't seem to care. I dismissed it as a small hiccup and decided I wasn't going to let it ruin the trip. We packed up our stacks and some firewood that we had bought at the store and drove the last little bit to our campsite. It was beautiful. We were at the very edge of the campground on the edge of the last loop, with no one else camping anywhere near us. In fact, I don't think anyone was camping on that loop at all. I don't know much about camping or campgrounds, but the spot seemed nice enough. It was clean and flat with a small fire pit in the center built out of old crumbling red bricks and covered in powdery white ash. We parked the car, popped the hatchback, and began to pull our stuff out. There wasn't much to unpack. We had brought one tent for the three of us, some fold-out chairs, a cooler, and some fishing poles. Griffin swore he knew how to fish, which I didn't buy for a second. I don't remember him ever mentioning fishing before I had started talking about camping. I suspected that all the stuff about knowing how to fish was just a way to coerce me into inviting him along. He could have just asked and I would have said yes, but I think I mentioned that he is kind of a goof. Once all of that was out of the car, we just all sort of stood around looking at each other, unsure of what to do. After talking about it a little, we decided to hike a little bit before it got dark. There was a lake nearby that was the real attraction for that park, but after sitting in the car for hours, we agreed that we wanted to stretch our legs. We took our water bottles, phones, and a small map of the park that we had picked up at the park station. Emily helped me read the map, since I always got turned around easily. Luckily for us, there was a small trail that started near our camping spot, so we decided to hike that for a little while until we got tired and then turned back. The hike was just as nice as the rest of the park had been so far. As we hiked along, we looked up at the beautiful towering trees, some with mushrooms growing right out of the bark or soft fluffy moss floating down from the trunk. The sounds of the birds in the trees and a faint breeze rustling the leaves were the background noise as the three of us walked and talked. The air smelled damp and loamy, like the soft dark dirt that we pressed beneath our feet. It was so relaxing. I remember feeling so happy that I planned the trip. My new job was stressful, and I knew Emily was still stressing about if and what new job she could get. Griffin was in his senior year of high school, which had its own unique set of stressors. It was really great to get away from everything for a little while. We probably walked for about an hour and a half before something popped our little euphoric bubble. Griffin was at the front of the pack, and I was hanging back and goofing around with Emily. We almost bumped into him because he had stopped in the middle of the path, frozen shock still. When I asked him what was wrong, he just held his hand asking us to wait. We did, Emily and I both looking around for whatever made Griffin stop. He wasn't a very serious guy, but he was smart and could get his shit together if he needed to. It took almost a full minute before I finally saw what he was seeing. Leaning around him, I tried to see down the narrow path just ahead of him when I saw it. I don't really know what I was looking at, other than it just looked like some kind of really large animal. The path turned just a little, about 10 feet ahead of us. Whatever it was, it looked like it was standing on the path facing us, but there was a curtain of leaves and brush obscuring it from sight. I remember that it was big, more than anything else. It looked like it was hunched over on all fours, but even so, it was almost as tall as me. It looked like it had brown, or maybe mottled brown-gray, and covered head to toe in fur. I could sort of make out a long face with big ears, but the face was behind a bunch of bushes, which made it difficult to make out. Once I saw it, I reached out and grabbed Emily's arm to get her attention. She stopped whatever she was saying and looked to where I was looking, and I felt her go shock still. We all stood as still and quiet as we could. Griffin was in a staring contest with whatever that thing was. I didn't know what to do except shut up and hold still, and hopefully that thing didn't go into attacking us. It felt like we were frozen for a long time, but it was probably only a couple of seconds. It was tense. I could feel my muscles tensing up. I could feel the adrenaline singing through my body. I thought for sure we were going to have to run. I was trying desperately to remember every nature documentary I had ever watched, racking my brain for what you were supposed to do in a situation like this. Did you try to make yourself look big? Did you make loud sounds? Or did you lay down and play dead? Would that even work if the creature saw you up and walking around first? And was all this just for bears? Or would this work for whatever this thing was? In the end, it didn't matter. After a couple of incredibly tense seconds of staring, the thing turned around and slowly walked off into the woods. We all held still, huddled together on the path, watching as it made its way deeper and deeper into the woods. The second that thing was fully out of sight, I grabbed Emily's arm in one hand and Griffin's in the other, and took off like a shot for the campground. We got back without an issue and stayed there. The happy tone from earlier in the day was gone, and I could tell we were all a little shaken. We tried to talk about it, but it was like none of us really knew what to say. We kept theorizing back and forth about what it could have been. It was big enough to be a moose, but none of us saw any horns. The fur sort of looked like a dog or maybe a bear, but a dog couldn't be that big. Maybe a bear, we thought, but in the end, none of us could be sure what we had seen. We were all spooked, but we built a big warm fire and tried to bring the mood back up. We cooked hot dogs and marshmallows over the fire, and the sweet smell of wood fire did a lot to warm us up. I tried to turn the conversation towards something happier, but it was hard. I knew my eyes kept straying to the dark woods just behind us, and I caught Emily and Griffin doing the same more than once. We didn't stay up for the past nightfall. When Emily suggested getting ready for bed, Griffin and I were quick to agree. I was happy that we all decided to share a tent that night. Griffin wasn't some waif of a guy, but he wasn't exactly huge either. With him in our tent, it was a tight fit, but I felt better having him there with us. We had a lantern in the tent and tried to keep the conversation going as we settled into our sleeping bags. We were all tense, but the day had been long and busy. Despite the flutter of anxiety still in my stomach, I found it hard to keep my eyes open once I laid down. At some point, while Griffin and Emily were still talking, I nodded off. It felt like I had only blinked my eyes when I felt someone shaking me awake. The lantern was turned off and it was pitch black in the tent, so it took me a second for my arm to recognize that the hand on my arm is Emily's. "There's something outside the tent," she whispered directly in my ear, so quiet that it was barely a sound. I froze, every trance of sleep leaving me in an instant as I turned my ears towards listening. I didn't have to wait long. I almost immediately heard what Emily was talking about. Something was walking around the very edge of our tent. I could hear its quiet footfalls in the sparse leaf litter around our campsite. I could even hear the huffs of breath as it sniffed around our tent. Once my eyes had adjusted, I realized I could actually see the tent walls shift as whatever it was sniffed at it. I clutched Emily close, trying to move as little as possible so not to shuffle the sleeping bags and make noise. With my other hand, I reached for Griffin, but could only feel his foot through his sleeping bag. It felt like hours that we were frozen there, petrified and straining our ears for any possible sounds. Whatever it was, it sniffed all around the tent multiple times before moving on to investigate the rest of our camp. We heard it scratching all the ashes from our fire and turning over our camping chairs. Eventually, we heard it get inside the cooler and the wet sounds of something chewing and snapping through all the food we had stored inside. After a long time, the sound stopped. Emily and I sat frozen for a long time before we felt safe enough to start talking. We woke up Griffin, who had somehow slept through the whole thing, and told him what had happened. He was all for opening the tent and looking around to see what damage had been done, but it was still the middle of the night. I especially was terrified of going out there to find a sleeping bear, so I convinced him to wait for morning. Sunrise was only a few hours off. Once the sun was up, I felt more comfortable leaving the tent. We passed the next few hours uneasily, talking in circles quietly until the gray light of dawn finally pushed through the thin material of the tent. When we went outside, our campsite was a mess. Whatever it was that had come in the night had gone through all of our belongings that weren't stored in the car or the tent. It had left everything strewn all over the campsite, with a lot of it destroyed. Almost all the food we had brought with us had been eaten, and the chairs had been ripped up with some of the metal bars bent almost in half. Our ashes had been scratched out of the fire pit, and some of the bricks had even been pulled out. There were tracks all over the campsite. Anywhere that the leaf cover led us, we could see big animal prints, paw pads topped with three big toes with matching claws. I held my hand up to one print and found that it was bigger than my whole hand. The discovery sent a shiver down my spine. Bears have four toes, not three, right? Griffin had asked me, but I just shrugged. Not being an outdoorsy person extended to not knowing much about animals or local wildlife. When it got light enough, all three of us walked down to the park station to report what had happened. We told them that we thought a bear had come through during the night and the woman at the counter seemed upset to hear it, but not shocked. She called a park ranger to come take a look and assured us they would have more to tell us once they had a look. She gave us free coffee and asked us for details. We told her that we thought we saw a bear on the trail north of our campsite yesterday, but hadn't been sure. She told us that it was pretty unusual for anyone in the area to see a brown bear, let alone one get so close to the camps, but that it wasn't unheard of. She chided us for not telling them about it when we first saw it, but I let it go pretty quickly. I think it was pretty obvious to her that we were new to camping and didn't know the first thing about what to do. Before long, the park ranger, Ranger Bob as he introduced himself, came rolling up on what looked like an off-road style golf cart. He called it a Gator. I don't know if that was a brand or style or what, but I didn't bother to ask. He loaded all three of us onto the back of his cart and we drove back to our campsite. Ranger Bob was also very nice and accommodating. He made the appropriate impressed sounds when he saw the destruction, and agreed that the way our cooler was opened, despite having a latch, looked like the work of a bear. I noticed that when he looked at the tracks, though, his whole demeanor changed. He went from mildly concerned to moderately upset. He wanted to know a lot more. He wanted to know what we saw the day before, exactly what it looked like and what it did. He wanted to know where we were from, how far from home, and if we knew anyone in the area. I told him that we were about a 5-hour drive from home, and that we didn't know anyone in the area. He frowned and looked thoughtful. He said that he would move us to a cabin nearby for our trouble and his peace of mind. I personally was shocked. Cabins were something I had looked into initially when planning the trip, but they were a lot more expensive than the campsites, even if they were still cheaper than the hotel rooms. Getting a free upgrade was pretty wild. Since we were still convinced, we had just had a run-in with a relatively unaggressive black bear. Ranger Bob helped us pack up what was left of our stuff into the back of the car, and led us through the campground to the loop that contained all the cabins. The cabins were called rustic on the website. That basically meant that there was electricity inside the cabin, but no bathrooms or stove or oven. There was running water, but it came from a spigot outside the cabin. There were 4 bunk beds shoved into a room so small it was practically a closet, and a fold-out couch in a tiny living room area. There was also a screened-in porch with a rough wooden picnic table inside, and a charcoal grill sitting just outside the porch. Even with how rustic the cabin was, I felt indefinitely better to have 4 walls between me and whatever was roaming around in the woods. It certainly felt much safer than the 4 walls of our canvas tent. We all thanked Ranger Bob profusely, and he smiled and said it was no problem. Before he left, he handed me a phone number on a scrap of paper that he said was an emergency number for the Forest Service, and told us to call if we had any more close encounters. With that, he jumped on his gator and drove off. Sometimes, I really wish Ranger Bob hadn't given us that cabin. I think if he hadn't, we would have just went home. The vacation would have been a bust, but that was so much better than what ended up happening. Encouraged by our upgrade, we decided to stick to our plans we had made the day before. We all changed into our bathing suits and made the short walk from the cabins to the side of the lake that was cleared for swimming. It was a beautiful summer day with only a few tiny clouds skating across a clear powder blue sky. The lake water was warm, and I could smell burgers and potatoes frying from a nearby snack shop. Under the heat of the sun and the weightless of the water, all my worries bled away. We had a ton of fun swimming and playing the day away. There was a volleyball game set up nearby that we ended up playing in briefly, and Griffin got into a heated game of chicken with some nearby high school kids. After a lunch of hamburgers and sodas from the snack shop, Emily and I laid out on beach towels tossed over the spotty lawn and enjoyed the great weather and the sounds of kids screaming. It was a great day, and one that I still cherish. That night, we were careful. We were inside the cabin before nightfall and had all the windows closed and locked with the curtains drawn. We had fun playing card games, and Griffin even whipped up a very dumbed-down version of Dungeons & Dragons that Emily and I quickly became too lost to follow. We had been drinking a little by then, and Emily soon had to go to the bathroom. There was a combination bathhouse and restrooms about 100 yards from the cabin on the way back to the park station. We played with the idea of trying to pee in a bucket or an empty bottle, but eventually decided that it would be safe enough to walk to the bathhouse. The cabins were closer to the park station than our previous campsite, and we were surrounded by other cabins full of people. We would be walking by other campsites on the way to the bathhouse, and once we got there, the bathhouse had bright floodlights on top of it that would make it easy to see where we were going. To be safe, I offered to go with Emily while Griffin decided to stay behind. The walk there was dark and quiet. I could see campfires crackling and fire rings through the line of trees, and the low sounds of people talking. But little of the night and sound reached us as we walked the path. The bathhouse was a low concrete building, perfectly square. It was built out of cinder blocks and split in half, the left side for women and the right half for men. There were no doors to block the entrance. Just a little turn and you had to enter the bathroom. Like I remembered, big bright floodlights sat on either corner of the roof and shone down on the gravel path in front of the bathhouse. It was almost searingly bright after the quiet darkness of the path we had just taken through the campground. I followed Emily into the bathroom and leaned against the stall door while she peed. We joked about Griffin's game and about her breaking the seal so early in the night. I theorized she would have to make at least 3 more trips to the bathroom before the night was out at the rate she was going.
"Maybe I'll just pee behind the cabin,"
she suggested as she finished up.
"It's not like anyone would notice anyways."
We started walking back to the cabin, but something felt off. I could still see the orange light of the campfires through the trees and hear the low sounds of people talking, but it sounded muffled in some way I couldn't quite define. Emily clung to my arm as we shuffled down the path as quietly as we could manage. I'm not ashamed to say I clung back. We were within 100 feet of the cabin when it stepped onto the path right in front of us. It was almost unmistakably the thing that we had seen before in the woods, but this time, it was standing on its hind legs in full view with no bushes or trees to shield it. It was incredibly tall and somewhere between 8 and 10 feet tall, I would say. It looked like a huge dog. That's the only way I can think to describe it. It had the head and body of a dog. Its hind legs and feet were dog's legs, and it was covered in shaggy brownish black fur. But its hands were what I got stuck on. Its hands almost looked human with long twisted fingertips with black curved talons. It looked at us and its eyes caught the light and shined it back at us. They were the eyes of a predator. We froze, Emily clutching at me and me clutching her back. It was a repeat of what had happened the previous day on the trail, but now it was the dead of night with just the two of us. We got no warning before it leaped at us. One moment it was standing there, at least a dozen feet from us, and the next it was on us. When it leaped, I didn't know what to do. I threw my arm out in front of my face on instinct and tried to tuck Emily behind me. The creature bit down hard on my arm and I heard a loud snap which I assumed were my bones. I heard Emily scream and then it was shaking me. The pain was incredible, and this is where my memories start to break down. My therapist has reassured me that this is a normal reaction to extreme trauma, but it still bothers me that I can't remember everything exactly right. The creature shook me the way dogs in police training videos shake people when they bite down. Except, instead of me lifting the dog with my arm, the dog creature whipped me back and forth with its mouth so hard that both my shoulder and elbow dislocated. I could remember the feeling of something inside my arm shredding, and then something like cold numbness running down it. My other hand was up at the thing's mouth, trying to pry its teeth off my arm. I remember trying to kick it, but there was something wrong with my leg that it wouldn't move right. I would later find out that my knee had been blown out, snapped backwards at some point in the struggle. It shook and shook me, and I think I started to pass out eventually. I know that one moment the dog man was shaking me violently, and that I recognized my own warm coppery blood spraying in my face, and the next, I was face down on the gravel path with no idea how I got there. Then, somewhere in the night, there was a horrible scream. It was Emily. I recognized the sound right away. It snapped me back to consciousness, forcing my idled brain to sit up and pay attention. She sounded terrified in a way I had never heard before and would never hear again. I started to hear other screams from people I didn't recognize coming from the same direction, but I couldn't focus on them. I remember trying to stand on my good leg, but any kind of joisting on my left leg was excruciating. I ended up trying to army crawl in the direction of the screams with just my good arm.
I don't know how long I crawled or how far I got. There was still screaming when I felt someone grab me under the armpits and begin dragging me away in the other direction. I remember fighting them desperately, but I had lost a lot of blood by that point, and any struggling I did was token at best. I didn't understand at the time, but it was Griffin. He was the one who dragged me almost 100 feet back to the cabin and closed the door. I really don't remember anything after this, and have to rely on what Griffin and others have told me to fill in the blanks. Griffin put a tourniquet on my arm to stop the bleeding. If he hadn't, I would have bled out on the cabin floor within minutes. He tried to call the park service, but by then, they were being overwhelmed by calls from people all over the campground reporting sightings of a dog creature. He then called 911 and had better luck. But because we were so far out, it took 20 minutes for an ambulance to reach the cabin. Griffin rode along in the ambulance with me. He said that I was in and out of consciousness, mumbling and tossing against the restraints. At the hospital, they nearly had to amputate my arm. It had gone so long with almost no blood flow, but luckily, my brother was able to convince them to try and save it, and they were able to do so. After a very touch-and-go surgery to try and repair the worst of the damage, they felt that I would likely get function in my arm back. Whatever that thing was, it had basically turned my forearm into hamburger meat, and had shattered both my radius and ulna. I was in the hospital for a week, heavily medicated, undergoing multiple surgeries to try and pin the bones back together. I would have to undergo many more on my arm to get the functionality of my hand back. A detective came to briefly interview me, but it seemed pretty plain to me that he didn't believe a word I said about the dog man. He gave me such a sympathetic look as he left. I'm sure he assumed that I had a total mental break due to the attack. I asked about Emily pretty much from the moment I was conscious until I left the hospital. I asked the doctors, the detective, and Griffin, and nobody would tell me what had happened. They said I was too delicate, and that they wanted me to focus on getting better first. I felt more frustrated during those days when I knew nothing than I think I ever have before or since. After I left the hospital, Griffin gave the bare bones version of what they knew. I was able to fill in the rest with some online research. Based on what I've put together, multiple campers saw Emily running through the campground pursued by something big and fast. That's where the accounts get hazy. People couldn't commit to what they actually had seen chasing her, only that it was some kind of huge furry animal running full tilt on all fours. Whatever it was, it caught up to her just feet from the park station's main building. It tore her to shreds. I only managed to look at the crime scene photo one. By the third photo, I had to run to the bathroom. I barely made it to the toilet before I violently emptied everything in my stomach into the bowl. I didn't sleep for 2 days after that. I haven't tried to look again since, and I doubt I ever will. On some level, I believe that she saved me. I know it was probably just pure instinct that told her to run once the thing had me. But if she hadn't run, the dog probably would have stayed there and killed us both. When she ran, I think it ignited its predator instincts, and never would have let me go otherwise. I don't question for a second that the dog creature would have came back to finish me off after he had finished with Emily. After all, I could barely move. It had no reason to think I could get away. If Griffin hadn't heard the screaming and come to get me, I think the outcome would have been the same. The two of them together, they saved my life that night. To this day, Emily's cause of death is listed as unknown. I guess I should be happy that they didn't brush it off as some bear or dog attack.
but it's hard to be happy about anything regarding the way she died. The park shut down by the next year. I don't know if it was the lack of patronage after such a horrific death, or if the local government decided that it wasn't worth the risk to let people camp there anymore. Either way, I'm happy to know that at least no other campers are at risk of going through the same thing. I hope this story helps someone. This was a real thing that happened to me. I'm not embellishing it, and I'm not making it up. Be careful of what lives in the woods. Listen when other people tell stories. Sometimes, they're not just stories.